Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Stamps.com. When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now here's the show.
The options we have for women aren't all great, but they do work, and there's a lack of trying and focusing on men, although that's changing.
A birth control pill for men. After decades of development, it's one step closer to reality. Today's Tuesday, December 19th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, for decades, the pill has given women a way to prevent pregnancy. And now, another pill could give men a similar option for birth control. Also, the music of Cuban-born pianist Harold Lopez Nussa.
I consider myself very lucky enough to be born in a musical family, be born in a musical country, musical island, a musical city.
But first, Senate Democrats wanted a vote this week on a deal that would significantly change immigration in the U.S. in exchange for more aid to Ukraine before it runs out this month. But Republicans are saying no. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell put it this way yesterday.
Border security policy is complex, and our colleagues at the negotiating table are clear-eyed about the fact that getting this agreement right and producing legislative text is going to require some time.
Talks are still taking place this week. On the table, how to expel a record number of asylum seekers at the southern border, and how much power the president should have over immigration. Congresswoman Nanette Berrigan is a Democrat and chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. She spoke to Scott Tong about the ongoing talks.
The president said he is open to significant compromises on the border to push through this funding bill for Ukraine and for Israel. Your caucus opposes many of these compromises. Do you feel like you have a sufficient seat at the negotiating table?
No, we do not. There is not a single senator, Latino senator from the Hispanic caucus at the table. There's not a single member of the CHC at the table. And that's wrong. It's unacceptable. What's happening now, Scott, is not a negotiation. It's a hostage taking. What Republicans are doing is they're basically saying, we're not going to give you anything. This is just what we want. We want to effectively end asylum. And we know that because if you take a look at what they're saying no to are things that would help at the southern border. They're saying no to millions of dollars that are going to combat fentanyl crossing the border. They're saying no to millions of dollars from our Border Patrol agents. They're saying no to millions of dollars for CBP officers at ports of entry, millions of dollars to make the border more orderly, even for things like immigration judges so that cases can be adjudicated faster, even $1 billion for ICE detention beds. This is not a negotiation to actually help what's going on. This is a hostage taking of critical money that our allies need because they want to eliminate asylum and they want to do things that they can't get through regular order. And that's what the starting problem here is. It's not a real negotiation. Yeah.
As I hear you talk about this, Congresswoman, it sounds like, as you put it, the Republicans are not negotiating in good faith. It doesn't sound like this bill would go anywhere.
Well, I don't believe they are. And this is a question I continue to raise is how would this get through? And the stakes right now are very high. We're talking about people who are fleeing violence, people who are coming not because they're choosing to, but because they're forced to, because they have no other option. And we should remember we're a nation of immigrants, and we should remember why these asylum laws are in place in the first place. So how will it get through is a very good question. By my account, we've already heard from Speaker Johnson on the House side saying he's not going to even put anything on the table unless it's something closer to H.R. 2, which is a draconian Republican anti-immigration and pretty much trying to end immigration as we know it, a piece of legislation. If he were to put this on suspension, for example, where you don't even pass a rule of something that generally has to get done, you would need, by my account, about 60% of the Hispanic caucus to support something, about 60% of the progressive caucus. So I don't know what the pathway is, but what I'm seeing is Republicans try to put in as many what I call poison pills, bad non-starters, to see if they can get their members to come over, especially the ones that don't support Ukraine, to support something like this, right? We're also talking about...
Can I ask about some specific provisions? I'm sorry to jump in. Reportedly, some of these items are on the table: speeding up deportation of undocumented migrants, restricting those who can seek political asylum, requiring people to be detained as they're requesting asylum. You mentioned kind of poison pills. What are you most concerned about as far as something under active discussion?
Well, you know, one of the other things that you didn't mention is a parole authority, which the president has been using to orderly process, orderly have people come through immigration. And that's something that has been a fight.
Oh, that they can be in this country as they're waiting for their asylum hearings to play out?
Well, this is, parole authority is what's used, for example, to bring over Afghans when we pulled out of Afghanistan. It was used to bring over Ukrainians during the war, you know, to be able to bring in vulnerable populations. And this is something Republicans are trying as well to make sure they can get through. Their take on this has been, we need to curb the president's parole authority. This is an actual way to have legal migration, and they're trying to take that tool away. It would be even worse at the southern border. So that is a complete non-starter, and it shouldn't even be on the table, yet Republicans keep coming back. Title 42, a trigger that would basically allow the administration, and not just this one, we got to remember these are long-term changes that would apply to any administration. And when you have a candidate who is basically, you know, talking like Hitler about immigrants poisoning, you know, the blood of this country and making do that he's going
to
be a dictator.
President Trump's comments last couple of days.
Yeah, and that he is going to carry out mass deportations. These would be the very tools that he would need and that he would have long term to be able to carry these out without us being able to go to court. So some of these measures are really terrible. You're talking about mass deportations, okay? You're talking about making it easier to deport people, puts in jeopardy immigrants in this country currently, because we know that when you go into workplaces, when you go into different places, even if you have a targeted search, if you come across undocumented immigrants, they are called collateral damage. Those folks can be also deported. And these are people who've been in this country all their lives, 20
apologies,
years, 15
Congresswoman,
years.
We have to run on you. But thanks for the time, Nanette Balagan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, a trial is underway for a birth control pill for men. It's a small trial, but significant. Scott picks up the story when we return.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
For more than 60 years, the pill has given women a way to prevent pregnancy. And now a pill could give men a similar birth control option. A small trial is getting underway in the UK to test whether this new pill for men can work to prevent pregnancy. Annalisa Morelli is a reporter at Stat News, our editorial partner, and she's been covering this. Annalisa, welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, this is a very small trial, 16 men, early stages, but this drug does not use hormones for birth control. Why is that important?
Well, because we know that hormones come with a wealth of side effects, hormonal birth control methods, that is. And we know that from women who experience anything from weight gain, mood changes, acne, all sorts of side effects. The last time a birth control pill for men that was hormonal was into trial, the trial was halted because the side effects were considered too severe. And so having a method that's non-hormonal in trial, even though, as you said, it's like, you know, it's a very beginning, it's a very small trial, sort of looks at the possibility of something that doesn't have quite as many side effects.
So in this case, this drug focuses on vitamin A, which in the body plays a key role in sperm production. So I assume this drug is meant to get in the way of that production?
Yeah, so what it does, it blocks a receptor of vitamin A in the testes, so not in the whole body. Vitamin A still is absorbed as normal in the whole body. And by doing that, it prevents the testes specifically from producing sperm and releasing it, making, you know, the person infertile. And according to what the developer are hoping, it should work in a few weeks, and then it should continue working for about 2.5 months, maybe even longer, after it's interrupted, which is good because it means that if a person forgets to take a pill, it doesn't become fertile immediately. But, you know, there's a bit of time, so there's less of a risk of unwanted pregnancies that way.
I do recall that vitamin A deficiency we have known that has been known to make men infertile.
We've known that for about a century, so it's really old knowledge that way.
This pill's name does not exactly roll off the tongue. YCT529 sounds like my kid's college fund.
Yes.
What might the timeline be if this succeeds in trials and gets to market? What are we talking about?
So the developers say they hope even 5 years, but potentially maybe 5 to 10.
Why has it been so hard to develop a birth control pill for men? Is it the science? Is it the culture? What?
It's the culture, I would say, and the funding that comes with the culture. It's a little bit of a sort of like chicken and egg situation where, you know, we have methods of family planning for women. Therefore, women are sort of considered in charge of family planning, or women are in charge of family planning because that's the culture, and therefore all the methods are sort of targeted to women. In any event, this has created a culture where we think men won't step up to that role and there's no need for them. We're sort of happy with the status quo. And drug companies don't necessarily have the incentives to invest in large trials and like developing new drugs for something that we sort of have covered. You know, we've accepted the options we have for women aren't all great, but they do work in many cases, and there's a lack of trying and focusing on men. Although that's changing, the culture is changing, and definitely we know that the demand from men is changing.
Speaking of that demand, since Roe versus Wade was overturned, we've seen the numbers arise in men seeking vasectomies, which is, of course, a surgical procedure. Does that suggest new interest in men seeking birth control options more broadly?
Yes, there are organizations that have done surveys and they have found much higher percentage of men. It went from 39% to 49% of men who said that if a birth control method, you know, a pill was available on the market, they would take it within a year. And this is after the Dobbs decision, because we are now in a legal reality that's different from pre-Roe v. Wade. Vasectomies in many cases are reversible, but it's still a surgery. And condoms, we know, have a high rate of failure. So definitely we're seeing a much higher interest among men.
And just briefly, are there any other male birth control options in the works
There's one, it's a hormonal gel. It's being tested on a larger number of men. The trial is going pretty well. However, it's not as easy. It's a gel that gets applied to the shoulder. And, you know, it's not as easy as getting a pill. But that's the only other option that we have so far in a clinical trial.
Annalisa Morelli is a reporter for our editorial partners at STAT, the health and medicine publication. Annalisa, good to have you again. Thank you.
It was great. Thank you very much.
Coming up, Deepa Fernandez talks to Cuban jazz pianist Harold Lopez Nusa about life, music, and the neighborhood they both lived in Havana. Stick around.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why Betterment believes cash can be a strategic choice.
There are times when the market is volatile, when customers are a little nervous about investing. We came to understand that there was an opportunity to introduce cash as part of an investing strategy and to give back yields to the customer.
Learn more about high-yield cash accounts at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed. Cash reserve offered through Betterment LLC and Betterment Securities. Betterment is not a bank.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options within your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think of great Cuban jazz pianists, maybe you think of the virtuoso Chucho Valdez. I know that's who I think of. Well, move over, Chucho. There's a new kid in town. Okay, so Harold Lopez Nusa is far from a kid. In fact, he's from a very storied Cuban musical family, and he's just finished a US tour where he wowed audiences, including my 12-year-old son and I at Berkeley's Freight and Salvage Theater, where we were so lucky to see Nusa perform with his four-piece band. It was a phenomenal show. And Harold Lopez Nusa has a new album out just in time for the holidays. It's called Timba la Americana. And I'm joined now by Harold Lopez Nusa. Bienvenida, welcome.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.
So, Harold, it was such a fabulous show. So Cuban on the one hand and so many other influences going on as well. I want to ask you, Cuban jazz is so storied, and you come from a family steeped in music and well-known across Cuba. Tell me where you fit in. Where is Harold Lopez Nusa in the world of Cuban jazz?
Oh, that's very hard to say. I don't know. I consider myself very lucky enough to be born in a musical family, be born in a musical country, musical island, a musical city. And I think that it's because of that I'm today a piano player and composer. And I'm touring with my music and my band. Yeah.
You know, I think let's dive in there, because I have to say I was very lucky. I spent a year living in Vedado, the Havana neighborhood that I believe you're from, Calle Bay 23. Yeah. There was truly music on every corner, and maybe not as much as some other Havana neighborhoods, but I'd love to know what it was like growing up in Havana, in Vedado, where you were surrounded by music.
Yeah, well, actually, I was born in Centro Havana, which is very near from Vedado. Mm-hmm. But, Centro Havana used to be the center of the city, but right now it's Vedado, and it's where almost everything happened, where the concerts happened, where the bars are and the clubs, and where my school of music was. So I spent a lot of time in Vedado, and then later I was living over there. My father was still living in Vedado, and it's my favorite part of the city because you have cinemas, concerts, theaters, bars, restaurants, everything. And, of course, I was born in a very, very popular neighborhood, and the music was part of my life. I mean, in my house, because of my parents, they were playing music or having students in the house, but in the street, because they were playing rumba just on the corner and then doing some Santeria just behind my apartment, in the radio of the neighbor. So yeah, music everywhere. And that's what made me, a music fan of everything. I mean, the music in Cuba, as you say, is very important. It's part of the life of the people. Yeah.
You know, that scene that you describe of rumba on the corner or the Santeria coming from the apartments behind, did that encourage you to pursue piano as a career? Because, it's not often that young people, especially talented young musicians, are encouraged to do it as their career.
Well, I took the piano because of my parents. So they took me to the school. And it's true that my friends over there, they were, just waiting me to play some baseball in the street and go to some parties over there and listen to some rumba. But thanks to my parents, I took some lessons in the conservatory. And after a few years, I just fall in love with these instruments. And I began when I was like 8, but it took me like 10 years, maybe. No, I don't know, like 6 or 8 years. It is when I really decided this is what I want to do.
So, Harold, a Cuban jazz pianist like you comes after greats like Chucho Valdez. Did he or maybe other Cuban pianists influence you?
Oh, yeah. Chucho is my big hero. You know, it's because of him that I'm playing piano and jazz today. I remember that when I just go to the school to study, at the end of the year, he came to school to play for us, the kids. That blow my mind until today. He's still blowing my mind every time I saw him playing. So yeah, he's a big, big inspiration for myself. Yeah.
Well, let's let our audience hear some more of your latest work. This is from your tune, Conga a la Americana. As I understand it, this really funky rhythm comes from Santiago de Cuba.
Yeah.
That's not close to Havana, where you were raised. And I also hear a lot of Afro-Cuban influences in this tune. Tell me about composing it.
Of course, the conga is the main inspiration, we can say, but have for very different places, jazz, Latin jazz, Afro-Cuban. It's a mix.
Harold, let's play another from your latest album. This one is called Mal do País. And this one has the traditional Cuban beat in there, but such a different feel from the last one.
Yes.
There's something a little upbeat about it, but it's tinged with melancholy. It sounds like you're longing or missing someone. Tell me about the song.
Yeah, that's me missing my country. So that's Mal du Pays, means in English homesick. So yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's very melancholic. It's my open hair over there.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, because you moved to France from Cuba just 2 years ago. Yeah. And I have to say, many Cuban musicians who I've talked to who move away from Cuba say that the adjustment is so huge because of the way people in many Western countries live their lives kind of behind closed doors in their private homes or workplaces. And music only happens in clubs or studios or theaters, which is so different to how it happens literally everywhere in Cuba. How has the transition been for you?
Well, very hard. Very, very hard. It's a different culture, as you say. I miss a lot, you know, all these parties and rumba and the music in the street. But yeah, at the same time, it's a challenging for myself and my family. And we also have a lot of new opportunities. And it's also great. But if I tell the truth, I'm still missing a lot of my country. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go out with a song called Tumba la Timba. Say, Harold, this feels like being at one of those ubiquitous rumba parties that happen all over Havana. Tell me about this song.
It's exactly that. Yeah, I did.
It's so fun.
Yeah, I did this tune thinking in this neighborhood where I was born and in this rumba party that they were doing every week over there. And that's me just looking from the, you know, from the window outside and see those people playing that crazy rhythms in the congas, in the tumbadoras, and the you know, the woman dancing and the party going on and they're drinking rum. Yeah, so this is my image of everything, all of that, yeah.
Well, let's play a little more of that as we go out. Pianist and composer Harold Lopez Nusa talking about his new album, Timba a la Americana. Muchas gracias, Harold. Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias a ti, Deepa.
That's our show. It comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Lynn Menegon, Shirley Jihad, and Ashley Locke. Today's editors were Julia Corcoran, Micaela Rodriguez, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Michaela Varela. Theme music by me, Mike, and Max Liebman. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the NPR Wine Club. NPR Wine Club members have contributed over $1.5 million to helping create a more informed public. B21. Join the charge at nprwineclub.org/podcast. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.